Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, not canceled by coronavirus, just saying. And joining me today are my also not canceled co-hosts, Wario Will.
Okay, I think I figured out the idea now. The creation of the Zika virus must be created by Umbrella Chronicles somewhere down in an underground laboratory right now. If we can just somehow get into that laboratory and get away from the POWs, perhaps we can engineer a vaccine and maybe some news of a Nintendo Direct somewhere down the line if it's hidden in that Umbrella Corp lab somewhere deep in the underground. But right now, we try to hang on, everyone. We gotta find that underground laboratory and combat the Z virus.
Okay. This is Joker. Mission is go. I was like waiting for this to end. I was like, how long is he gonna go? I mean, like, that was actually quite impressive, Will. I'm not gonna lie.
I was kind of channeling that whole conspiracy theory from that one famous scene thing. Yeah.
All right, and of course, Tellius Tyler is here also.
It is very self. Nintendo has not released Animal Crossing yet because, listen, if people just need an excuse to sit inside all day. There's no better game than Animal Crossing. Sit inside all day.
I kid you not. I think that Animal Crossing sales is actually going to go way up because everyone's like, well, what am I going to do? The sports are canceled. Everything else is canceled. My movies I wanted to see upcoming are canceled. I need something to do. And here's Nintendo with one of the biggest games. Because remember, the 20th is supposed to be like the day, like, of all the games coming out. And now it's just Animal Crossing. So, like, everyone's like, get it! Get Animal Crossing! So, I'm just saying, like, week one, I'm predicting it right now, week one, 5 million in sales.
It'll be interesting to see how it does for, like, the brick-and-mortar store locations. Like, are people going to be afraid to go pick it up? Or is everybody buying from Amazon now and they're just getting it delivered anyway? Like,
that's a good question, actually. I like that.
Here's one thing I learned about Nintendo fans. You don't underestimate them. And
no.
Ourselves included. Because, again, like, I actually we've seen Smash friends here, like, line up in New York in this cold or rain or whatever, even through sickness. I'm pretty sure, like, they would do anything for games, especially if it was something like big, like Mario, Smash Brothers, or Animal Crossing.
Yes, so you're ignoring a key factor here, and that's that Animal Crossing is one of the more casual Nintendo titles. So it's not like us; we have to worry about. We would brave anything to get the game. I once skipped work so I could go get Smash Brothers. This is true. I can have the Instagram post to prove it. And but for kids, that's the question. And so parents may be like, oh yeah, we were going to go get Animal Crossing next week. I don't really want to go into Walmart or Target or Best Buy. So hey, there's Amazon. He'll get it 2 days later. What's the harm? So, like, that's the mentality you got to think of. It's not the adults like us. We don't care. We'll live. But the kids, right. the parents won't want to risk the kids, especially in an environment where they're going to be, no doubt, bringing the kids to get the game so they can play it in the car on the way home. So, yeah, I could see them going to Amazon. But I'll definitely check on that next week because it doesn't come out till the 20th. And by the time we record, it'll be the 19th. So we should actually keep an eye on that to see if the pre-orders for Animal Crossing, like, jump on Amazon, because that's happened with, you know, Smash Brothers and Mario Odyssey and a lot of others where it, like, ranked, like, as the highest selling item before they even came out because of all the pre-orders. So that might happen with Animal Crossing now.
Right. And I also just realized as well, like, because I'm living in New York and there is the first party store here at Rockefeller Center. They did also, like, had, like, the still with the Switch bundles of Animal Crossing that also includes, like, a little nice little journal with it.
There you go.
I'm just kind of curious, like, wondering, yeah, like, as you said, will this thing jump up to the points? Because, again, this is the perfect quarantine game right now. Yes.
Yeah, literally. It's like, I can't live my real life. I'll live my Animal Crossing life. This is the perfect situation for Nintendo. My gosh. Did they plan this the whole time?
and then
think about it. Then when the cure comes out, it's gonna be miraculously discovered by some guy named Dr. Mario. Boom.
Oh.
You're devious, Nintendo. I approve. I also have a bunch of anime references going through my head. It's like, oh, you thought the Chinese created the coronavirus, but no, it was me, Nintendo!
Nice.
Alright, well, we do have a podcast to get to, but we'll get started off with what have you been playing? Not much. I'm not gonna lie, I had work this week and I was very happy, and then I had a certain like family things to take care of. It's been a weird week. I was at a con last Saturday, which was fine. There was the last con. I was actually very lucky that I got my last 2 weeks of cons in, because if they were at their usual scheduled times, they would have gotten canceled. So thank you, C2E2, for being in February. I thought I would never say that. But so that took up my day. But I have been playing Heroes, and we had the new Three Houses banner. I got a Ferdinand von Eyre and Bernadetta.
Okay.
And, ironically, though, once again, I got a new character as a 4-star.
Yeah,
it was weird.
Yeah, I had the same thing. They did start, so like now there's a 4-star focus. I guess you can get every one of them at 4 stars.
Yeah.
And they're like, it doesn't get rid of. I think they just increase your chances of getting the characters, which is nice.
Yeah. So and I approve, because I got Ferdinand as 4-star and Bernadette as 5-star, and I've been playing Forging Bonds to try and get like those free tickets so I can, you know, try and sneak in a free 5-star free summon. No luck yet, but you never know. Also, these stories at the Forging Bonds is hilarious. We have Alphonse ticking off Lysithia because she's young and short, which we all know she doesn't like. And then Ferdinand is trying to hook up with other nobles, gets paired with Lynn, and he likes her, but he can't be with her because she's not noble enough. I want to smack that boy.
I don't think he's not trying to like date them.
No, not like that. But like he's trying to like be one with the nobles, you know.
Oh
but
yeah.
But connect. he admits that Lynn was an impressive figure, and I'm pretty sure he was talking about Brave Lynn because he referenced her on horseback. But whatever. And but he's like, you know, she's amazing. I really like her, but she's not my idea of nobility. And I'm like, dude, shut up.
Listen, Ferdinand von Eyre. It's what he does. He's the noblest of nobles.
But then he went like praised Edelgard, who's his rival, and I'm just like, he's like, the way she swings an axe is so noble. I'm like, oh really? I'm pretty sure it's gonna be pretty noble when Lynn kills you with a bolt between the eyes. Like, just saying, brother. Like, I know you'll like this, Tyler. I would rather date Lynn than Edelgard. Any day of the week.
Edelgard, she's a monster.
We're gonna get to that.
Aside from personality, Lynn is kind of the better figure, honestly.
Yeah, I love Lynn. I've loved Lynn ever since I saw her in my first Fire Emblem game, Blazing Sword, and I think she's awesome. She's not my top Fire Emblem female, but she's definitely up there. Obviously, my top one is Nyla, Queen of Atari. I mean, wow, she's awesome. But yeah. What? I have a type. Aisha Clan Clan. I got Nyla. I got a type.
I do respect it. It's not that I'm gonna argue with your taste there.
Thank you. Anyway, but so I'm looking forward, and I was actually relieved by how quickly I got Ferdinand and Bernadetta, because I only had like 210-ish orbs, give or take. And I even played the story banners and everything beforehand so I could get some extra orbs. And then I got them, I think, between, like, 35 orb summons. So, like, orb total summons.
Yeah, yeah.
But, So I've still got, like, 210 for whenever the next banner is coming, which, according to the schedule, is, like, the first week in April. So, that's good. And then we're going to have a mythic banner in between, so.
At the end of the month. Yep, yep.
I also read a review from IGN, which I do trust occasionally. As long as it's not a 7.8 review, right, IGN? Anyway, it was for a Murder by Numbers.
Oh, that one, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Like it's Phoenix Wright meets Picross, and I find that an interesting thing. And so now that my schedule is much more open, I might try that. And of course, I do have the Fire Emblem Cindered Shadows I've still got to go through. So I probably will be diving that in the next week, depending on my workload, which would be great. So that's it.
Like, yeah, I guess for me on the Fire Emblem Heroes side of things, well, like, I actually also managed to pull two of the banners as well. Like, for me, I actually got Annette on my on the first summon, and as well, later on, I actually got Fernand von Eyre 4-star. And yeah, I'm just really surprised on my recently, I got some extra 5-stars, like another Corrupt Merida, Fina 5-star, and also for Fae Pass users, just recently got Moosefell Ike, basically regular Ike, but Moosefell's spawning armor, which I gotta give props to the designers. Like Moosefell Ike, it looks very pretty, especially with that contrast of red and blue. So yeah, Moosefell Ike, not bad design, not bad design. And overall from that, like aside from me playing, for me, I just basically been playing a whole lot of Mahjong on Judgment just to pass the time, just getting through some of my backlogs. It's just kind of weird that, yeah, I've been not really been utilizing my Switch as much. I was like thinking, is there something I can really do? Yes, like I threw Xenoblade Chronicles X, or not X, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, or like just in the Shadows. There's just so much things to do. And of course, at the time of recording right now, like when this gets released, tomorrow is going to be releasing of Neo 2, which I love the first Neo, and I played the alphas and the beta trials. It's like, like this is personally for me my Bloodborne, the Samurai Dark Souls. I like, sure, we had Sekiro, but I love Nioh, and just I really can't wait to get my hands on this game. And of course, later on the month is Persona 5, then Final Fantasy VII Remake, which I'm really surprised that these things have not been delayed because of the C virus right now. So I'm glad that they're still on track. Hopefully, at least hoping I'm not jinxing it. Hopefully, but overall from my side, it has been generally quiet. I mean, yeah, I tried. Also, I've been working on a little bit of things here for the site as well. Just also doing a little like a spotlight piece for the site. So overall, light it's kind of lights on things and games right now until I get Neo 2 and then of course Persona 5 down the road. But Animal Crossing, who knows? Who knows? I'm still on the fence on.
I finished my Crimson Flower run the other day, which was very exciting. That was the last of the four Three Houses paths I needed to walk. And now I'm ready to switch over to some new games. But at the same time, I am feeling the call to run back either the Blue Lions or the Golden Deer again. So for the sake of NEP, I feel obligated to mix it up and get back to playing Dragon Quest, which I was very much enjoying, and then I stopped because of Fire Emblem, and also Link's Awakening. I mean, my backlog right now, Will, you alluded to, is insane. There's just so many games from last year. I still haven't beaten Luigi's Mansion yet, and I still haven't gotten Astral Chain, so
Oh, yeah, definitely
right
recommend
now.
Astral Chain. Yeah, it's very fun.
And Yoshi's Crafted World. There's so many games that I want to go back and play. And now, I mean, listen, I know I've been telling you guys there's never going to be another Nintendo Direct. I mean, there's going to be one eventually. There has to be. And I'm sure they're going to announce new games, although maybe we have more time than we think to clear out our backlogs just because they're not going to announce a big game and drop it right away.
No, definitely not.
But we're gonna, before we know it, we're gonna be in the swing of new games again. So I do need to get to clearing those things out. But yeah, outside of Fire Emblem, it's been pretty quiet on my front as well. I was very much enjoyed Crimson Flower overall, though. I see a lot of people in the community, the Fire Emblem community, saying that it's the worst route. And
Gosh, I wouldn't agree with that.
Well, I think like the idea like it's short, like it doesn't have as much
It is
content as the
shorter.
It is.
other
It
one
is.
is.
It's weird because, like, and I know you can compliment, you can acknowledge this. Remember when I finished my Crimson Flower one? It was my second one, which of course I beat before Will, but now it's his first. And sorry, I lost train of thought. What was I talking about? Oh, Crimson Flower. I beat it, and I'm like, wait a minute, wait a minute. Isn't it supposed to be? Like I felt like there was another chapter, remember? Because I
Yeah,
was like,
yeah.
you know, you win, you get the kingdom, and then you're supposed to go want beat the ones who slither in the darkness. Oh no, that's in Claude's run. Like, and it's like,
Right.
why? You couldn't, it's one chapter.
It is strange. So I guess it would have been anticlimactic if the final battle, 'cause, I mean, that story is focused on Edelgard versus Rhea, so Rhea being the final boss makes sense. I get that for sure. And those who sleep in the dark, they're kind of your partners throughout that playthrough. So, like, I get from a storytelling perspective what they were going for. I actually, from a gameplay perspective, and again, I played this game since it came out pretty much nonstop. It came out in July, so I've still been just playing this game. So maybe it was because of just a fatigue, but I felt like the pacing was actually pretty good in Crimson Flower. I liked the fact that every battle felt really important. In the Golden Deer and the Blue Lions, while I liked those stories a little bit more, I found some of the battles were like eye rolling. Like the battle at ALL or in the Fire Valley, like the first time I did it, it was fine, but the next couple times you're like, I don't really feel like doing this one. Yeah. Crimson Flower, meanwhile, every single battle felt significant. You know, you take the bridge, then you fight Claude, then you defend the Garrick Mach, then you take a critical base, and then you're fighting Rhea at the Teltian Plains in this epic struggle, and then you're done. So it felt, I liked the pacing of it. It took me like 20 less hours to beat than the other paths. It was very good. I definitely want to write up a thing about each of the paths at this point. Like, but it's just, the game is so irrelevant at this point, given that it came out so long ago, that it's not really particularly interesting. But I have lots of thoughts on which is the best path and why and all that stuff. So
yeah, I mean, again, you sunk out like hundreds of hours in this game, no doubt. So I mean, this game you can pretty much like go replay if you want to, like, I don't know, match the support links or just like the equipments, all the items. Even with the Ashen Wolves DLC, you could pretty much like get extra hours to the point. So honestly, yeah.
make new teams and all that. And now that you like with my Silver Snow run, I'm gonna incorporate the Cindered Shadows crew or the Ashen Wolves crew, as well as grab as many of my all time favorites like Felix and everything, so that I can have like the best possible team. So yeah.
That's what I want to do. I want to do a playthrough where I can only use one class at a time. What I mean by that is I can only have one brigand in the army at a time, because the class list in the game is so massive. But I have never used the grappler class. I have never used the fortress knight class. So I want to try to like come up with a team like. It would challenge me to come up with a team that could fit each one of the classes and go from there. So, yeah, that's like one idea. But with Fire Emblem, there's so many different challenge runs that you can make. I definitely could see myself getting 600 hours out of it. I've already gotten 300.
All right, so our ramblings aside, there honestly has been an interesting bit of news this week, including the virus that's taking over the world. And no, I don't mean the zombie virus. That's next month. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. Now, I refuse to start this section with talk about the virus, so let's talk about something just as shocking. Reggie Fils-Aimé has a new job. He's going to be on the board of directors for GameStop.
Huh?
So yeah, this is what's happening. He and a couple other people are going to be on the board of directors with the goal of helping shape the future of GameStop and connecting with the customer base.
So,
now, to be clear, this isn't just some puffery, you know, hiring. Oh, let's get Reggie in to build up our cred, though I'm sure that's a bonus. A lot of their top staff have left the company. Like, if I read the press release right, they said like 5 to 8 of their top people left, and they brought in Reggie and certain other people to help shape the future of the company. And Reggie himself went to Twitter and said, "The game industry needs a healthy and strong GameStop. I look forward to being part of the GameStop core board and helping to make this happen." So,
the first time I heard this news, like, what? Reggie is going to be on the board of directors for GameStop? Like, granted, unfortunately, that GameStop is had like a kind of a crappy reputation, especially with the recent practices and, of course, like employee practices, going to quota, subscription service, yada yada yada. Basically, just in order to have employees to keep their jobs. So, unfortunately, GameStop did not have a very good reputation. But now that Reggie's on board, ex CEO of Nintendo, coming to GameStop, possibly aiding it, Like, GameStop, you have one more chance to turn this thing around. Like, if you do not listen to Reggie, who is more or less the power of Nintendo, Triforce joke there is just like, yeah, you better value his advice. Because like that's also check as well the board of directors. I was at like the CEO of Walmart, and I think one more figurehead, I forgot his name. But with Reggie Fils-Aimé, I mean, the guy is legitimately a good guy. So like if you want to save this business, you listen to the good guy, honestly. So don't screw this up, GameStop. Do not screw this up.
Yeah, when I first saw this, my reaction was, wow, Reggie already has a new job? Like, I wonder if something weird was going on behind the scenes at Nintendo. But then you think about it, it has been a year since he stepped down as Nintendo of America president. So
Gosh, it has.
I'm sure that he just is, looking for a new challenge. You can only, Reggie seems like a doer for sure. So you can only rest for so long before you feel the call. And GameStop is going to be a real challenge. Reggie, of course, I think is a great person to add to that team, and I'm excited for him. I'm glad he's going to be kind of back in the gaming space.
Yeah, and also remember, he went away from Nintendo because he said he wanted to be a part of his, be more with his family. Like that
Right,
was his
right, right.
reasoning. He wanted to step away. And then so he's had a year to be with his family and, spend more time with them and relax, recharge. And he did like the Cornell thing. He was at the Game Awards. He's done certain other things. He's had time. Okay. So he probably was like, and then GameStop was like, hey, we gotta, reorganize. We gotta, build to the future. What can we do? And hey, there you go. Reggie's available. Let's see that.
I still can't believe how the heck the GameStop actually go and snag Reggie. I mean, granted, he is away from it, like no longer connected to Nintendo now. But of course, like we're given Reggie's past resume. I mean, again, he is a very good businessman as well, in a sense, according to strategists. So his repertoire would be a very good asset for GameStop. So again, GameStop, you have one more chance. Don't screw this up.
Yeah. I was like, hey, if we're lucky, when you go and sell a game, they'll give you 50 cents instead of 25. That's 100% increase.
Yeah.
All right,
No, keep
now.
it at $1.
Yeah. It's $1.25 is the best I can do. I'm taking a hit here. All right, moving on. Yes, we have to talk about this. The coronavirus. Everything's getting canceled. And that includes officially E3 2020. Barring an immediate cure in the next week or so, E3 is canceled. They released an official thing about it. They're saying that, they tried, but in light of the West Coast especially being hit in with the coronavirus, Seattle, as we noted last week, was one of the very much the hot spots of the coronavirus in America. So, yeah, E3 is shut down, and that's not good. Like
No.
they were teetering on the cliff, and now they're over it, and now they're just like Wile E. Coyote waiting to look down before they stretch out into oblivion.
It was an interesting, because we did discuss this before the podcast. Obviously, everything is being canceled everywhere, but E3, to my knowledge, is the furthest event
Yes.
out that was canceled.
At present, E3, which is in June, is the farthest thing canceled. Like movies, Comic Cons, certain other events, all public events, in the next month or two, and technically in May, like they've been canceled to one extent or another. But E3 is the farthest one, and it came before all the others, so that says something.
So, I again, this is just my inner machinations here. It seems like I don't know why they didn't wait to cancel E3, and I feel
Fear.
like maybe they I'm sure that the coronavirus played a huge factor in them canceling it, but I also feel that maybe they recognize that they need to reevaluate what E3 is, and being able to cancel it this year with Sony not showing up with their brand new console. I mean, that would have been a horrible PR hit. I mean, E3 was made for console reveals. So I think for them, they probably aren't too broken up about this, honestly. They probably know they need time to reevaluate the show and figure out how they're going to make it relevant going forward.
I could definitely agree with going to that perspective. Like, perhaps that you they had to make it as a calculated loss, and given to they can't they while they doing this thing for many years now, and yeah, the C virus definitely plays a role in that. But also, like, I've seen like many people, YouTubers and all that, aren't too like, is E3 like really relevant in the gaming space? Technically, no. You don't really need it to show like new games, new things, and all that. I mean, sure, like, but it does help because again, like, we got introduced to the Wii, with great means, like, my body is ready, Reggie, and everything else. Like, again, there's some things you can't get from like a normal digital press conference. Like, sure, there is like the pros and benefits what Nintendo has been doing, but having like a press conference, like being on a stage presence, is like, yeah, this is like it adds to the hype. I mean, again, like I like times that Keanu freaking Reeves came out to Xbox, like, wow, who would have thought Keanu Reeves, like, would
you're amazing
today, and have all these like memeable moments. And of course, like, we have Ikumi, everybody's favorite gaming waifu, and is just that it does help. While it's not mandatory, E3 is not mandatory to like do like board game sphere, it does help overall.
It's an unfortunate situation, and honestly, I think this is more about fear than anything else. And, you know, they were like, they thought that there's no way the coronavirus would be cured by June. I don't know. Or maybe they were like, if people think if it gets like to like May and they're like starting to cancel, it would be even worse for E3 if they were actually still on. So maybe I'm pretty sure they just canceled it so that, you know, they could let people have time, like a lot of time to get out of it, and then should a miracle happen, like say the next 4 weeks or so, and they get the cure to coronavirus, everybody's happy, blah blah blah, they can bring it back on, there's still time to plan.
It's not that simple. There's the cure for coronavirus, that even if they had that, like,
yeah,
the distribution of it,
I know,
such
I'm not
a
saying
challenge.
It would be
like,
easy, I'm just
it's
saying
not,
like,
yeah.
It's
done. Don't
things.
Hold on to any hope that it's coming back, that it might still happen this year. It's not.
Will, say your line, please.
Hope. Which line you're from?
Hope.
Don't
Hawk
do that.
Eye. Ronin. Go.
Don't do that. Don't give me hope.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. No, there is no hope for E3 this year. It's not happening. It's just, it's interesting to me because the landscape we expect to be so very different. Like, depending on how people handle themselves during it, we've seen two situations. One where the healthcare system just gets flooded with cases, and, you know, you can't get a hospital because everybody's in the hospital, and the disease is over faster, but it has a horrible, worst impact, versus whether it's long and drawn out, where if people take their time, they stay safe, and people still get the disease, but not all at one time. And maybe that is still within that window and that longer scenario where June comes around. And yes, we're past the apex of it, but we're still trying not to, you know, flood the system by having all these people come together and all get sick. So
I'm sure
that the health factor is number one.
I'm pretty sure that's the main reason.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is the main reason. Again, like, you don't want to have like held E3 and like all these people are gone sick to a gaming, and of course the media is gonna catch it, and you know how the media likes twisting. So I think that's probably like also understand why the ESA wants to shut it. Just again as a calculated loss. Yeah.
Now Nintendo has of course made a response to this, and they support the ESA and the shutting down of E3 for this year. And they have noted that we'll continue to be flexible and redirect our efforts to other ways of keeping our fans up to date about our activities and products. Because of the coronavirus outbreak, large industry events may be untenable for the foreseeable future, but we're considering various ways to engage with our fans, and we'll have more to share as the year continues.
Yeah, Nintendo, where's the direct?
Yeah, we're getting to that. That's the next topic, but... Yeah, it is a curious thing because, you know, Nintendo doesn't exactly have the biggest presence at cons. I mean, even at E3, they only have, like, a booth dedicated to, like, some of their upcoming titles like they did with the last, five Nintendo or E3 press conferences now, something like that.
Right. And the treehouse, the demonstrations,
Treehouse,
yes,
love,
always.
love the treehouse. But like those are very simple compared to the usual massive expansion that E3 has. So that works in their favor. And of course, their press conference, quote unquote, is always d a digital mega direct. So I still expect Nintendo to do a direct of some kind around that time. If anything else, just to honor the week of E3, because that's when people expect things. So we'll see. And then, you know, what they do with other, you know, showcases or it's all gonna depend on what happens in June. And I don't mean like, you know, an E3 resurrection or whatever, but like where are we with the coronavirus by that point? Is there something? Okay, I'm not gonna say I know things, but I have a source who is in the medical field, and she talks to a lot of doctors, and she says that heat is actually going to be something that works in our favor. Once it starts getting warmer, apparently the coronavirus doesn't react to that very well, which would explain why it's been spreading so much, because in certain regions of the world, it's freaking cold. So, including here in America, just saying. So,
Not here in North Carolina. It's 75 degrees today in scenic
Well,
North
I'm not
Carolina.
saying, oh.
And just a reminder as well, I just came from Malaysia, which is right at the equator, and they still had cases over there, so I'm not sh too sure about
Oh,
that.
I'm not. I don't have all the details, but she said I trust her word with everything. But she said that the heat will help. It won't kill everyone at all, but it will help. So we'll see how that works out. But
Everybody just go to the sauna then. Just get to a sauna,
yeah, get to a
relax.
sauna.
Yeah.
Sauna, humidifiers, yeah, Beidou humidifiers actually does help in me, yeah.
Maybe that's why I haven't been infected, because I'm right next to a heater that's pointed right at me. Just saying. Anyway, but everything that Nintendo does outside of directs, obviously, is going to depend on the situation where we're at in June. Because outside of E3, there's really no, like, PAX East was a major event, I suppose, that they would have been there. Was there anything really in April or May? I don't think there
Nothing
was.
really much. I mean, aside from like GDC, and then
Yeah,
of course there's
GDC.
Evo, but that's a fighting game thing. I mean,
Evo.
of
Well,
course, Smash Bros.
they
Stuff
would have been
like
there
that.
at Evo just to plug Smash Brothers, so that would have been like a minimal effort, but whatever. So, yeah, it's all going to depend on where we're at in June. So, we'll see. Now, on the subject of Nintendo Directs, we have new rumors. New rumors
again.
Yeah, again. So here's the newest rumors. Apparently, we will be getting a direct next week. It will be an indie direct, which actually collaborates with the rumor that I reported on last month, because it was for the same time frame. And then the week after that, we're gonna have a full-on Nintendo Direct. Allegedly.
Yeah, I saw this report. It's interesting. I don't know if the order necessarily like makes a ton of sense. I guess maybe it does because, like we were saying earlier, they're not going to just shadow drop a bunch of big games at a Nintendo Direct, but an indie Direct they certainly could.
Well,
So
and here's
maybe the indie Direct kind of sets the table for the next 2 months, and then the Nintendo Direct kind of outlines June through December. That's
Well,
kind of what I
and
expect.
here's another way to think about it. If you do the indie direct next week, that means that all eyes are on Animal Crossing. Whereas if you have the main direct, and let's say they drop a bombshell game for like November, they might be like, okay, I could get one game this year for myself. Do I get Animal Crossing, or do I get this new major title? So
Yeah,
placement
maybe I
is
do think
perfect.
that's a small very, 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 very small population of the person who thinks I can only buy one game this
Hey,
year,
with
and it's either this game
coronavirus,
in March or
nothing
it's
is off
this
the
game
table.
in November.
I'm just
Yeah, I
saying.
mean, true, true. I do think it would be beneficial to have a Nintendo Direct that shows Animal Crossing again before Animal
And
Crossing.
also, don't forget, while it's true that we all love Nintendo, there are these people, they're heathens, I know, but they like the other consoles.
I
So
hate those people.
it's, I
God.
know, right? Like those idiots who think that Final Fantasy VII Remake is actually going to come out in April. Come on! I mean, look at what happened to New Mutants. It was finally about to arrive, and what did they do? Delay it! So we'll be like 2 days away from Final Fantasy, and they're going to delay that thing to 2020 for some stupid reason. We all know it's going to happen, people. Embrace the Animal Crossing. Anyway, but like, seriously, there are people out there who can only afford like certain games a certain amount of time, And if there's, like, you know, a big announcement of a game that might be coming out, I'll even be fair and say May, you know, they might say, I'll push off Animal Crossing and save for May title. That way I can get Final Fantasy and then the May title or whatever. And, like, our dear friend Kromcho, she barely has enough to buy her own games, and so that's why she was saving up for Animal Crossing. And then they had a save data issue, and now she's not going to buy it. So, way to go, Nintendo. You just lost one of your biggest fans. Missy Kromcho.
Like, it's definitely, yeah, definitely something to look forward to. I mean, if the rumors are confirmed true. Like, the one thing I understand is, like, again, Nintendo fans is, again, as I said earlier, so again, they can be ravenous if anything else. Like, I still, even when the Animal Crossing Direct first came out with the Garden Post special pack, like, the new Animal Crossing Switch design, like, not gonna lie, that thing looks hot. That thing looks so sleek and, like, so chill. Design wise, the light and the island, yeah, it's like, and people just ate it up. They pre-ordered on Walmart, it sold out like hotcakes. Like, holy moly, like, yeah, Nintendo fans are ravenous. So, yeah. We're going to, with the pending direct that's going to be coming soon, hopefully, then, like, yeah, the Nindies direct will definitely help up, yeah, as you said, set the table, and then with the main direct. Would finally quench the thirst up for this year. I mean, heck,
hopefully.
I'd even be satisfied if they only just do this one direct, or like, no, actually two direct for the year for the E3 of that summer, just to like sate us. I mean, again, we still haven't heard information about the Xenoblade Definitive Edition and all that, so I don't know. There's a lot of titles that they have announced it for this year, but we still have no information yet. So if these rumors are true, then here's hoping.
Yeah. It's going to be curious for sure, but we will of course let you know. And right now, if anybody can save us from the depression of our world, it's a Nintendo Direct. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right, moving on. We have another rumor, but this one actually seems to be much more credible because of the source. I know that sounds ironic, but trust me, it's true. Koro, who has delivered tons of Pokemon information over the years, says that there is a new Switch exclusive game that is coming out. No word on the publisher or developer yet. The project is going to be apparently launching later this year in Japan, so maybe it might be a 2021 title or a holiday 2020 title, don't know. And it's supposed to be a, quote, new action game epic to follow Splatoon and Fortnite, end quote, which is a unique couple of games to compare to each other. According to Koro, the game is going to feature a new world that utilizes the Switch's performance to its very limit, where battles break out between skyscrapers in the middle of a peaceful city. So, I don't know. That's definitely... That's interesting. Sure, obviously, these are rumors, but with Koro, I would take them over certain other rumors. I mean, I don't want to sound like a Grinch here, but...
Best.
What was that?
PG.
Nothing.
I remembered it was PG. You didn't hear that. Erase that from your thoughts.
Uh-huh. That's what I thought. Anyway, so this does sound like an interesting rumor from this team, or from Koro. And it does sound like a very unique kind of style of game. And the fact that they're comparing it to Splatoon and Fortnite makes me think kind of Battle Royale-esque, you know, multiplayer focused, which is fine. Nintendo could use a few more of those. And the idea of fighting between skyscrapers, I'm not sure how that would look. And then, of course, the big one, which is it's going to push the Switch's performance to its limit. That's the key thing. So... I don't know. Hopefully, maybe this game will be revealed in the direct that we hopefully get.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, new IPs are always exciting, and when you say multiplayer, I always get concerned with Nintendo because of
online. Come on, Splatoon and Smash Brothers have been good, and
that's
Fortnite
what I was gonna
on Switch
say.
Is good too.
That is just what I was going to say. Specifically, Smash Bros. That's up and down, but Splatoon is very good online, so I do have confidence in that. Be a good idea. We really, the details obviously are very, very slim. We'll have to see what it looks like, but hopefully we'll find out soon.
Yeah. Will?
Warrior Will.
I mean, again, I got nothing else much to add. Like, this regard to this title, like, we did talk about this before the podcast, but basically, if they can take on this the Fortnite genre, the Battle Royale genre, because, again, like, recently we had that Call of Duty, Warzone. That just got released, Yeah, Warzone, which is like 100 gigs, which is like holy moly. And I mean, again, Nintendo is the prime contender to actually can king the Battle Royale, if anything else. If they can really have an idea that sticks, I mean, like with the original idea of Splatoon, then heck, we may have a contender. I mean, again, aside from the fact we have Tetris 99, which is, it's again, not Nintendo strictly, but I mean, it's something. But if they can do something directly involving with themselves, then yeah, this would be very exciting.
So again, hopefully we'll get information on this, but multiple people are reporting this, and it does seem like it's a credible thing. So fingers crossed for a new IP. And oh, wait a minute. If it's a new IP and a Nintendo Switch exclusive, that would mean someone's already got points in the Nintendo draft of the year. Huh. Such a wise individual to ask for new IPs from Nintendo in a year that didn't really have much.
I
So
mean, that's a pretty safe bet. You know what's impressive?
here
You
we
want to know
go.
what's impressive? Is back in January when intelligent person who predicted, quote, a new IP, come on, very easy to predict, said that Nintendo shouldn't have held a Pokemon Direct until they held a regular Direct. Well, we're in March and they still haven't held a regular Direct. I mentioned during that discussion that they needed to have one before March 20th. So we have 7. And the rumors are aligning that it's going to be right in that window. And if I get the day dead on, I think that you owe me the money that I owed you that I finally paid for something. I can't
Yeah, like
remember what it
2 years.
was now because it's so
You
long ago.
it
You
was for
owe me
so
those
you could buy
$10 back.
Doom. Remember, you had to buy the
That's
memory
right.
cards to get
That's
Doom.
right. Yeah,
You dang right
so
I
you owe me
remember.
twenty
I was waiting
bucks.
for that money for 22 years. I was at 20 years. For 2 years.
What a good surprise though when I gave it to you on the what at 100th anniversary episode.
150, but yeah. Anyway. So yeah, and then finally a very curious piece of news from our very own Wario Will. Take it away, Will.
So yes, like this is kind of a short little story of meanwhile that's happening in this world with the C virus. So this, like, as we know, like when we this certain game called a Ring Fit Adventure, basically Nintendo's newest venture in fitness genre for the Switch, has, well, last I checked, the sales actually were doing very well when it first released it. But if you're trying to look at this thing right now, you may be a bit out of luck because currently, like at the time when I At the time, I was like searching up at local GameStops, Walmarts, like basically any revenue store now. They are currently all sold out. Nowhere in my area in New York has any stock of Ring Fit Adventure, including with the peripheral bundle. So if you want to try to get fit with your Switch with Ring Fit Adventure, you may be out of luck. And I think the only place to probably get it is maybe at the first-party store at Nintendo NY here in New York, but that's only if you case you live in New York. So if you unless you are living here, then you're out of luck. But if you have a chance to have the opportunity to actually get Ring Fit Adventure in your local area, consider yourself lucky. You might as well hurry up and get it because I think last I checked, even on Amazon, kind of going up in price to $135. So yeah, it seems to be that Ring Fit Adventure is now a collector's item. So best of luck if you can try to find these things on a regular price.
It's crazy how well that game sold. I mean, that was what a smash hit out of nowhere.
Again, there's, like it is legit. It actually makes sweat. Actually, does make you fit. It pretty much is the Wii Fit training of the Switch. So it does work. Now I'm kind of regretting not getting it earlier because I can really use it, especially in my quarantine zone right now.
Right.
So.
That's what I was gonna say. I saw people online saying, "How am I gonna work out now? Because I can't go to the gym." And just replies of Ring Fit Adventure.
So anyone out there in Radio Land, if you can get Ring Fit Adventure for the normal price, do it. I sincerely recommend it.
There you go. All right. Well, that's honestly all the news we have, and so it's time to head straight into our main event. It's been almost a year in the making, thanks to a couple of people, and I'm kidding. I'm only making fun of Will here. and so one of the most interesting elements of Fire Emblem Three Houses, without a doubt, is the character of Edelgard. You know, because in every Fire Emblem adventure we have ever been on, even in the Fire Emblem Fates, all of our characters can be defined as heroes. And, you know, the protagonists, these strong characters trying to make a better world. And yet with Edelgard, we didn't technically get that. You can see it from a certain perspective that she is a hero, but or you could say like Tyler's perspective and say that she's a monster because of what happens in the Crimson Flower storyline and of course of how he depicts her in the other routes. But the question is Edelgard really a villain, or is she the hero of her own story? So we're going to debate this as we settle it in Smash. Alright, so here's how we're going to do it. Tyler.
Yes.
Okay. You just got done with the game. Your yes. passion and fire is the most hot right now. You know, you can say you have a crimson flame. Ha ha. Ha ha.
Good one.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm going to let you go first. I want you to tell me and Will and our viewers, why do you think Edelgard truly is the monster that you have thought she was since the Golden Deer storyline? All right.
So you're mischaracterizing my position.
You said monster. You literally said early in the podcast she's a monster.
I don't believe that I did. If you can play the tape.
Play the tape. Go ahead. I know I'm right. So, I heard you say monster.
I will riff off of that, though. Because the thing that makes Fire Emblem is that it has a very morally gray conflict. You know, it's hard to say definitively most of the time that one person is wrong. So the order of which you play the games is definitely going to change your perception. But playing Blue Lions first for you, Todd, specifically, may have actually changed your perception of Edelgard to be more positive. Because in that playthrough, she literally is a monster at the game. She is quite literally a monster.
Yeah, at the end, absolutely.
And you have to kill her. And she throws a dagger at Dimitri's chest, offers her mercy, and all that evil stuff. She is clearly a villain in the Blue Lions playthrough. But focusing on the Edelgard on her route, the story is obviously more positive to her, and that's in part because of Byleth's influence. That's part of, again, the crux of the game is, you know, the choice that Byleth made, which house to lead, had such an unbelievable rippling effect on the world of Fodland and the lives of all these students. And with him being with Edelgard, that certainly makes her less villainous at times. Although I would say she still does a fair of terrible, terrible deeds. She starts this war based on information that she learned from those who slither in the dark, a very untrustworthy, I think, as close to objectively evil group as you get in the game. Even they have like some sort of angle. If you look at things from their perspective, kind of see how they think they're doing the right thing as well, even though they're clearly not experimenting on humans, all that nonsense. They think they're above them. But Edelgard allies herself with them in that route. She plays a key role, or they play a key role in murder of your father, which Edelgard participates. They play a key role in manipulating Dimitri. They play a key role in basically trying to eliminate humanity. And they are your primary ally. There's a reason why you don't fight them in Crimson Flower. Edelgard, to me, is the primary villain of the game because she starts this war, kills countless innocent people because of her ambitions. You can say, yes, her cause is justified, that, you know, the system, the economic system, just like in our real world, the economic systems aren't fair and people are kind of being killed through that. So you might as well fight to overthrow it all at the same time. The point is, her starting this war, she starts it on poor information and it leads to just unnecessary deaths and countless unnecessary violence and countless deaths. Meanwhile, the other routes prove that there's a better way forward. So that's my case for why Edelgard is the primary villain of the game. Even if she's not the most evil person, she's clearly the antagonist.
All right, and that's an interesting point of view, and it, we really went into this in our Discord chat, but I'll explain my views here. When I saw Edelgard in the Blue Lion storyline, which was my first storyline, as you mentioned, there was no doubt in my mind that she was indeed the antagonist. She was the Flame Emperor, who actually was in a Fire Emblem Heroes recently. I got him slash her, so that was a nice little twist. And
I also just a funny trivia as well. Like, if you see the voice acting role, it actually says question mark question mark. So
that
she's
is
trying to
great. I love
confuse
that.
you, yeah.
Anyway, when it came to like watching the flame, because I never thought for a second that the Edelgard was the Flame Emperor until we found the dagger, and I'm like, wait a minute, is Edelgard the Flame Emperor? That can't be right, you know? And again, by this point, we had already seen the 5 years ahead storyline, you know, the Battle of Gronder Field trailer, where it was like, you know, everyone's trying to kill each other, so you know, it was like, oh yeah, because. Clearly, she becomes emperor, and that's fine. But to be the Flame Emperor was something different. And then, of course, her, you know, the Dimitri Mortal Kombat story or trailer, cutscene that I love so much. You know, that was a great one. And then, finding out that she had been amassed this giant army and everything. It was quite a spectacular in its own way. And then, obviously, when she transformed into a sacred beast at the end of her own making. Just to try and win the war was kind of horrifying, and I'm like, well, how is the Crimson Flower storyline going to convince me of this? And then you start talking with Edelgard, because as I say, there's always two sides to a story. And as I listen to her storyline, and I'm rereading it right now just to make sure I didn't forget anything, you know, her life was messed up. Like, you tell, you say that those who slither in the dark were the one who feed her the information about the church, and that might be true to an extent, but she
That is
never.
true.
Hold on, she never really trusted those who slither in the dark because they were the ones who experimented on her. They
Yes,
were the ones who gave her the
right.
two crests, who gave her, you know, her shortened lifespan, and they were the ones who basically put her father, the actual emperor of
Adrastia.
Adrastia, thank you. The actual rule of Adrastia is to basically a puppet. She was fighting against them just as much as she was fighting against the church because she blamed the church for the crests, which is partially true in its own right. And she was tired of all of it. She was tired of the dark. She was tired of the church. She was tired of this blind belief in a god in Sothis who had been gone for how many years? Like at least 1,000, right?
Yeah,
A
thousands of
th
years.
thousand,
Right,
thousand years. And, you know, we got Rhea who's saying, like, you know, Sothis will watch over us when it's clear. Well, we find out, like, in every storyline that that's not true. You know, Sothis was only brought back to life because of Rhea, spoilers. And so, you know, that wasn't a thing. And she's trying to make a world that doesn't have blind faith in a god that they hope will save them, but instead have faith in yourselves. And you see that throughout her army, whereas it's not just her friends in the Black Lions that she wait,
Black Eagles.
thank you, Black Eagles. I get those names mixed up all the dang time. Anyway. But that Black Lions does sound pretty BA. Anyway, so you know the Black Eagles. But if you look at her generals, one of them was like a very low-ranking officer in the Adrastian army. But because of his ambition and his desire to prove himself, he became one of the highest-ranking ones. Because Edelgard knew that he didn't believe in a god or the system. He believed in himself and the hard work he could do. And he, when Edelgard usurped her father in the righteous way, and you saw Ferdinand's father, who was very much a snake in his own right, you know, basically was like, this can't happen. It was like, I worked too hard. And, you know, then he realized, like, yeah, he got out schemed. That was like one of the coolest moments of the game for me. And so, you know, the whole war itself, the killing of the innocents, that's undisputed. She did that, and that was a very evil move. But her purpose, you could argue, was never more pure. She knew that if a war was to break out, people were going to die. But much like certain characters in certain sci-fi series that I love, they believe in the law of the anthill, which is if you kick over the anthill, the ants are going to die, but they're going to make a stronger anthill so you can't kick it over again. And so that's what she was going for. She knew that she would have to kill so many soldiers, so many believers of Saros and the faithful of Rhea, like Catherine, who very much has blind faith in Rhea because she saved her life. And, you know, she Edelgard's trying to say, shouldn't have blind faith. You can have faith to an extent, but shouldn't be blind, which is what a lot of people in the Church of Saros had. And we saw that in every storyline in the pre-war portions, like where we had to deal with the West Church, where you see Rhea execute these people just on her word. They were like, that wasn't us. That was, you not, don't know the whole story. And she's like, I don't care. You went against me. You all die. And Sedith and Catherine were right there with her, and they didn't object. The only thing that Sedith ever objected to was about Byleth. So he followed Rhea too, because he's one of the saints himself. So it's one of those things where, yeah, she did a lot of evil things, but her reasoning was as pure as you could get to an extent, because she's trying to save a world that's been lied to by multiple groups for like 1,000 years. And, you know, she's tired of the bureaucracy. She's tired of the castes. She's tired of, you know, those who slither in the dark, the manipulators of every kind. And she did
That's all true. That's
everything she did was to make the world better in a way that actually matters, and not just have it under her rule.
So there's one. Sorry. Well, I'll let you jump in a second. Todd made a lot of points, and I'm sure you'll be closer to his side, so I want to counter before I get them.
Well, you are used to a 2-on-1, aren't you, Tyler?
Yeah. Just because you have motivation, that doesn't make you not a villain.
No,
the best
course.
Villains have motivation.
That's
true. Like think of Game of Thrones. You know, think of Cersei Lannister, for example. Like, it's a character who had complex motivations, and she had a tragic backstory,
and
all these things that you said. But undoubtedly, she was still a villain.
Oh, she was.
And like the thing is, and again, the game is told in such an interesting way, in such a complete way, that I'm not saying that Rhea is the hero of the church when she executed those, the Western church, although I believe it's pretty implied that they were, in fact, members of the Western church that had been by those of Slither in the Dark. Executing them, you could say, is harsh. I agree. And I completely agree that is tough. But they were a rebellion. They were causing unrest in the citizenry. Rhea also had motivations that were to protect people. You forget when, well, I'm not saying you really forget, but when the Rhaemyr village was taken over by those who slither in the dark. Again, Edelgard is empowering those people this whole time. Edelgard doesn't stop your father from knows he's going to get killed. Rhea takes those people in when they don't have anywhere else to go. Like, she isn't an evil villain either. She's certainly not the hero. In my opinion, from a purely storytelling standpoint, there's this thing called the hero's journey, and I'm sure you're writer, Todd. You know the hero's journey.
Of course.
But there's 12 steps in it. And if you look at the hero's journey, Edelgard doesn't really fit that bill. Claude does to an extent, but the character, the hero of the game, is Dimitri. Dimitri goes through the traditional hero's journey. Many steps in the journey. He has his life before when he's a young boy. Then he has this tragic moment in the tragedy of Dusker that kills his family, leaves him isolated and alone. He ultimately meets the, or that's another step in Byleth. He has this fall. He has his rise again. He questions his beliefs. He has the return home moment. Story: the hero returns home, having learned something. When he comes back to Ferdiad and rescues it, Dimitri to me is the primary hero of the game. Elif would be the secondary one. Everybody else does have, and Claude is a hero as well. He's pretty, but he's less deep than Dimitri. He's a true north kind of character. But Edelgard doesn't fit. She does not fit in that hero's journey. She meets a few of the steps, but there's never. Of all the characters, she goes through the least character development in the game. She is consistent from day one to the end in the Crimson Flower path. Only thing that you, I guess, sort of happens is that she is nicer? Not, I don't even know if that's true. She certainly does not go on Rose's journey, whereas Dimitri and Claude, to a lesser extent, do.
I think Dimitri more than Claude. Claude is very cunning, you know. Like he does have. I'm looking at the hero's steps right now just to see what it is, and or just to remember all the steps. And Yeah, you're right that technically Edelgard has less than them, but she has her own hero's journey in her own right. Like, the hero's journey is meant for, like, the prototypical hero, like a Luke Skywalker or something like that. And, you know, definitely Dimitri meets a lot of these, outside of maybe, like, one or two. And but Claude's a little trickier because, you know, he was... His backstory is a little bit of a weird thing, but... yeah, Edelgard, I agree. She doesn't go on the hero's journey, but she goes on her own journey. It's a lot like Lysithia in a way, where you know, she's very indignant at times. She doesn't like it when people question her, but her journey is about, you know, righting her own wrongs of the what happened to her family and trying to get rid of the crest so that she can live and all that. And right, for Edelgard, she's like, she has the same problem. She's got two crests, she's got a shortened life. She's gonna make sure that her life when she leaves it is better than when she was brought into it. And that's her motivation. That's her journey. It's like, I got to make the world a better place because if I don't, no one's going to. So, and like you said, because of how the story is told, through the three versions of, Edelgard, and I do think there are three versions in its own right. I haven't played Silver Snow, so I don't know how that plays out, but three main versions, you know, it's slightly different. Like when Edelgard dies, this is a slight spoiler, Will. When Edelgard dies in Golden Deer, he dies at the hands of Byleth, and you see her almost weeping. She goes, "I just wanted us to, you know, make this land better." Like, and then he cuts her down. And then with Dimitri, you know, he's trying to be merciful, and she basically throws the dagger. She's got no chance. She knows Dimitri's gonna kill her. She knows that he will if she throws the dagger. She's not going to be submitting to the church that she fought so hard against, you know? So that, I believe that's why she threw the dagger. Better go out on your own terms than be the will of those you don't believe. So, you know,
Dimitri would have protected her. I mean,
no, but that's still like after everything, like this is kind of a villainous kind of thing, but after everything she's done, after all the effort she put into, you know, trying to take over, the last thing she wants to be is to be locked in a cage and left to rot. Like, yeah, Dimitri would have protected her, he would have made sure that she was treated fairly or whatever, but she would have been in that cage or prison or whatever for the rest of her life, and she ain't going out like that. Not after everything she worked for. So, yeah, like, so for her, death was the only answer she couldn't have. It's victory or death. And so, yeah. This is one of the reasons I love Three Houses. It's because, you know, each storyline is its own tale, and every ending feels special and unique. Like Dimitri, like the three paths of Dimitri. Again, I haven't played Silver Snow, but you know, if you play Blue Lions, he becomes the king that he's supposed to be. If you play Golden Deer, he dies needlessly in the battlefield.
So
like,
powerful.
That's
such a powerful moment.
It is.
Knowing what happens in Blue Lions, where he's like, I would have died a needless death without you.
Yeah, and then he does die
in Golden Deer. He does die a needless death without. Oh God, it's so sad.
And then in Crimson Flower, he's like leading the charge, alongside Rhea, and you know, trying to win. And then he's to his dying breath, cursing Edelgard. You know, break your bones.
Right.
You know, and then she's like, you know, you're gonna die here. And he does, and she beheads him, I believe. And it's just like, oh, Dimitri, why? So
I didn't see that.
It's not really implied beheading. It's just more you only hear the swiping of her axe. So
yeah.
Who knows?
No. And then Tyler, you missed one of the coolest scenes in the whole freaking game. So I'm gonna explain it to you. So you're fighting Dedu, and you get to the I don't know how you critted him like one shot, but whatever, with bolting no less, but okay. And,
Constance was a beast, man. She is so good. The Dark Flyer class.
Yeah. So anyway, so you get to Dedu, and he's so desperate to protect Dimitri at this point that he pulls like the ultimate screw it maneuver. He takes one of the stones that you can turn into a sacred beast, and he puts it into himself, and he turns into this like mega super sacred beast, and he distracts you long enough for Dimitri to get away. And it's just like, oh gosh, it's frightening. But he's like, I'm doing this for you, my friend, my lord. You know, I will make sure you are okay to my dying breath. And so then he goes sacred beast, and he's like a totally hard to kill.
It's
awesome.
Yeah, even on casual mode, he is pretty tough to beat down. Yes.
Yeah, I was on the medium difficulty when I faced him in Crimson Flower, and it was difficult, but I made it through.
I do think it's cool that they have that chapter play out differently depending on how fast. Because yeah, my approach to it was weird. Like I didn't realize you could cross that first bridge that's right in front of you in the beginning. It like looks low move. So there was like six demonic beasts because all the enemies that had crest stones transformed. But I killed the dude before he did because I went over to that side right away. And I missed that, and I didn't get to see the beheading scene because I just killed Dimitri with Edelgard in battle. Like it was just he wasn't even the last general. I killed somebody on the other side of the screen in the actual map. So I didn't get that like the picture of Edelgard standing over him as he's like on his knees. I think again. Yeah, I didn't get that at all. I just saw that online. I think that kind of goes back to the developer's intent of having her as the villain. He offered her mercy, and she didn't do the same for him. And that to me is the difference between those characters. Edelgard, the ends justify the means. And okay. Like Dimitri,
I gotta counter that. Claude. She had the option, Claude, you can, you know, surrender or you can die. She gave him the choice. When she fought Dimitri was the rabid beast. He was, you know, I'm going to kill you and I'll sacrifice everybody here to get it done. You know, with Claude, she knew he could see reason. And then she, if you accept his surrender, he leaves. And he's a man of his word. So she's still capable of that kind of, you know, rational thinking. But with Dimitri, she could tell he was a dog at that point. She had to kill him.
Well, so I didn't see that on my playthrough of Dimitri. Like, he was bent on revenge, but he seemed pretty good. Like, he didn't, not like heroic, he didn't see him as, he didn't lose his eye, he didn't have the dark circles under his eyes as he did in his path when he goes down the dark path. So I assume, like, I didn't see that cutscene where he's cursing her and all that stuff. But still, even at the same time, there's still other ways, you know, you could have taken him prisoner. Claude was definitely like a situation where she recognized, okay, you know, mercy is something I can give here, but she still had that option in to Dimitri as well. And really, it's just the way that they painted it too. Each step of the way, the those who slither in the dark are like cheering you on as you kill the children. Like, they're literally called the Children of the Goddess. We know Sothis. Sothis is great. We know Sedith. Sedith's great. We know Flayne. Flayne is great. Edelgard thinks that those, the Goddess, are monsters and that they're evil and that they've been, you know, manipulating humanity for years. And some of her points are correct, like manipulative things. But it's not out of this evil will to undercut humanity as she it is. Her facts are incorrect, and she doesn't recognize that. And instead, she those who slither in the dark and their stories about
but remember, she's also playing them. Like, she's playing. They think they have complete control over her because of, you know, the information they fed her, and yet she's no fool. Like, when she meets, what was it, her uncle or whatever.
She knows
she can't trust him, but she knows he also speaks for those who slither in the dark, and so
he is a member of those who slither.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm saying. Like, she knows that, yeah. And she's keeping him close.
It's not even her uncle. It's like he's like a Anya type. That's how I interpreted it, at least. He's an Agarthian in disguise.
Oh, okay. Anyway, but she keeps him close, and she knows that. She's working with them, but she's also working against them, and that's why it was so confusing in the epilogue, where it goes like, okay, then she went and fought against those who slither in the dark.
They were the last step,
but she knew she had to have complete control of the country before going after them, because to do so beforehand would be foolish. And
right.
So it's, you know, keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer. So that's
right, but how many people did they experiment on while she let them go? That they destroyed the entire city of Arryn Road, you know, like that. Do the ends justify the means? I personally would no on that, and I think that the story presents that the answer should be no.
It depends on how you read it. It really does.
It's definitely all perspective than anything else. Like, the way I was playing on the Crimson Road is, like, one, like, I just trusted my, like, way my mentality was basically, I trusted my students. Like, I trusted Edelgard to believe that she's doing the right thing. Because, like, of course, naturally, as a professor, you want to, like, believe your student has the right to trust in your student. Because, like, I want to be, like, a great teacher and always, like, put your faith in the students and not in the system. Because, again, the system is pretty crappy. And with Edelgard's beliefs of, like, yeah, manipulation of faith, not, like, again, she even says herself, I only am an enemy of the church, not of the faith, when she faced Araya the first time around. Sure. And that's one thing I appreciate about intelligence is a play on perspective, like, because, like, even though she, like, in all pretty much most of the routes, she is portrayed as said enemy of, like, again, she is a tyrant, she would do anything, pave the road of blood to get her dreams, like, view as the dictator as that she is, but when you play her route, like, she is aware, like, unfortunately, sometimes the right choice is the most hardest choice to do. And, like, even with support of Hubert, like, he knows that he will sacrifice the world to make Edgar's dream come true, even if it means on a path of blood, which it
he killed his own father, like, dang it.
Yes, killed his own father and everything else. Like, it, while that itself, it is, like, depending on the deeds, yes, sacrificing millions of lives. Like, do you sacrifice the 100 to save the millions? And, like, again, that is always the gray area of, like, that of these stories, what I can tell. Like, it's never clear cut. It is always never clear cut with these kind of stories. But with Edelgard, like, when you play her route, like, she has her motivation, and it's to the point you can't help but do respect that decision, even if it is, like, morally questionable. That the fact that you had to question, like, kill many innocents, like, is questioning that morality in question is, like, that's what makes her such a great character. And then when you play her route and then reach that end, ban the crest system, to ban, like, nobility, discrimination, and, like, basically help, like, Lysithia and all that. Sure, there is that, of course, those who slid in the dark, that is that, like, that's working behind the scenes. But as Todd said, like, first, like, there is the bigger problem. First, uniting the country first before you go against the ones who slid in the dark. Of course, going against her uncle and the end of it. But of course, that there's that question, like, is it worth the sacrifice? Does the end justify the means? And all these, like, more questions that raise up. That's why I gotta preach about intelligent systems. But for me, when I finished up her route, like, again, I trust Edelgard that she wanted to do best for the world, that to ban the systems, to ban religion, like, to, like, again, ban the church system. Again, not of faith, but the church system. When you face off against with Edelgard, like, to finally clean this, like, old system, that this old, I mean, boomer of a system, or just, like, this old traditional system that has been reigning on the kingdom for so many years, to finally, like, have a new possible hope of change, then, yeah, in a sense, then Edelgard would be the hero of her story, that she is doing what's right for her country.
Yeah, and let's not forget about a certain other Fire Emblem game, Fire Emblem Conquest, where you had to also side with the dark side of the Force, if you will, and Nor, and you had to watch a lot of people die just so you could keep your king, get your king off the throne. I mean,
yeah,
we had to.
Edelgard's conflict was much more morally ambiguous.
Well, it was.
Like,
but
if
I'm
you
chose, like,
conquest, you are awful.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, but he's doing it.
One.
But again, he's doing it to try and save his Nor family and the people in general, because he knows that King Garon is not gonna be a good ruler, and yet he knows that to get him off of it, he has to take over everything and then kill him. So, you know, it's killing many but saving the rest by making sure that he's gone from this world. It's
yeah, but
not,
like,
perfect,
you do that
but
in Birthright too. Like, Conquest, they did a terrible job of making that one morally ambiguous. That one's like, oh, you
right,
Conquest.
Right, right.
Sorry, you are killing everybody. forthright you like save everybody. That they did a terrible job on that.
If you say
arguably,
so.
Yeah.
All right. So with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler, let's talk about the ironic poll question.
Right. We asked you if you thought E3 would get canceled because we're smart and we thought, you know, canceled. So we asked you, and you're also smart because 54% of you said yes and 6% of you said no.
Yeah.
And lo and behold,
we have predicted the future. We're like the Simpsons. Yeah. Also, apparently, I kid you not, I got a message from my boss while we were talking, and apparently an episode of The Simpsons predicted that Tom Hanks would get sick from this worldwide epidemic, and now he has.
No.
They did it again!
No way.
Kid you not.
Why do they always predict everything? It's so weird.
I don't know. I mean, they predicted Trump, they predicted an actual Nobel Peace Prize winning theorem of like science. They predicted smartphones, I think I said that. No, smartwatches. That was it. Smartwatches. And Trump being president. And Game of Thrones, how that would end. They predicted Disney buying out Fox.
Mm.
Like they did the whole thing. 20th Century Fox, an offshoot of the Disney company. And on and on and on. It's crazy how accurate they are. It's like,
I think I know. I think Matt Groening is a Time Lord. He's seen the timelines.
No, maybe one of their writers is named Nostradamus. Don't. All right. So let's. I want to do a poll question this week. So what should it be? Should we be about will E3 be back in 2021? Or is Edelgard the villain of Fire Emblem Three Houses? What else should we do?
Let's do E3.
Okay. All right. So with hashtag E3 2020 canceled due to hashtag coronavirus, can it or should it come back in 2021? Word it however you want, Tyler.
Yeah, you got it.
Because obviously that's going to be a question on everyone's mind until they announce that it will or will not be coming back.
Right. And if they're gonna like adapt Nintendo's way of like showing a showcase now, I wonder for this year. That's this question. Yeah.
So of course, let us know what you think about Reggie Fils-Aimé being on the GameSpot board of the directors.
GameStop, not GameSpot. GameStop.
Sorry, I wrote GameSpot and it's stuck in my head now. GameStop. You know what they should do? There should be a company called GameSpot, and like they opened up their doors like right across from GameStop just to confuse people to get them to come into their stores. Because I bet you they would. Just saying. Mm. Anyway, GameStop, what do you think about the E3 cancellation? When do you think is going to be the next Nintendo Direct? Will we get one in the next week or two? What do you think about this new Nintendo action game that might be coming out? And are you one of the reasons that Refit Adventure is currently sold out? Do let us know. And so we'll see you next week, barring coronavirus infection. But I'll do a podcast if I'm sick. I don't care.
Yes, I will probably not be here next week unless there's a Nintendo Direct or something we might have. If we can move it, that'd be great.
My dad's
60th birthday is being celebrated. So, barring. Yeah.
We got you back, Tyler. Anyway, so for Tellius Tyler and Warrior Will, I am Triforce Tyler. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag.